Hello and welcome to episode 318 of the Hooniverse podcast. I'm your host, Jeff. With me is my man, Ron. What's up, Ron?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
Good. Got a little beverage.
Yes, sir.
People like it when I chew on ice directly into the microphone. All right, we got a handful of things to talk about. This is at your behest, a bonus, not really a bonus, but an emergency recording session because we were both working this week.
The makeup,
and it's going to slot in between the next base episode, which I recorded earlier in the week, which runs next week. And we did a fun episode with them, their marketing director, Jeff Chu, who's a really cool guy. And I think we're going to have more to talk about in the future. This was kind of like a good initial episode.
I can't wait to hear it myself.
Yes, sir. All right. So we got a handful of things to talk about, like I said. And I know you wanted to talk about Barrett Jackson and the Daytona 24-hour race. So yes. let's kick things off with Barrett. Let's kick things off with a BJ.
All right. Okay. Take another drink. That's what kind of party it is.
I'm digging the mashed potatoes. Sorry, go ahead.
So yeah, I had a chance to watch a lot of Barrett and kind of keep up and see what was going on. And I don't know, my mind was blown. There was a lot of big money sales, and like I won't even touch like on the hypercars and the exotics. Like, you know, we saw four GTs and even like the first Z06 VIN sell for stupid money. I think that was probably the number one seller. Went for like $3.6 million. Those charity sales are always out of control.
Like, yeah.
Much attention to that. That's they're not, you know, they don't forecast actual.
They're not a barometer.
Yeah, totally. But
and anytime there's a new Corvette that's number one, it's always Rick Hendricks. It's always for charity, and it's always a shitload of money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, okay, that's your write off for the year. That's your loss of the year. Okay, great. But, you know, the things that I was interested in that we, you know, some of the vehicles, the chassis that we've discussed in the past were Grand Nationals GNXs. And I was pleasantly surprised. Can you hear that?
Yeah, what was that?
It's an Aventador with straight pipes. I don't know what's going on at this gym across the street, dude, but in the last week I've seen three McLarens, a 720 with, you know, full kit, exhaust, wheels, everything, a 765 and a 570, like also kitted with wheels. And now we've got full kitted Aventador with
doing hot boy shit. Jesus.
Hope his shit catches on fire.
Yeah, right. Right. Trying to record a podcast here, motherfucker.
Hey. But anyway, yeah, Grand Nationals GNX. So, like, I think they had, like, a GNX with less than 100 miles. I think it was, like, less than 70 miles. Sold for $275,000. I predicted that car was going to go for over $300. I said $350, so I was a little surprised that it didn't, you know, cross that barrier. But the last Grand National ever made actually outperformed the GNX. So the last Grand National off the assembly line, and I think it was like a no-mile car still in the plastic wrapper, went for, with fees, $550,000.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So,
it's more than that dumb Aventador outside. Totally. And cooler, though, but
you
still.
You buy two of those.
Yeah.
With that kind of money. But I don't know. It was cool to see, and like I love that these cars are valued. I don't know that this is realistic. I don't know how long these values are gonna maintain and what this does to the regular car market. You know, every year, Fox bodies, Chevy trucks, you know, whatever the chosen platform is, it's like, you know, really popular for that year. Like the market kind of explodes. But I mean, you know, it's the last GN. It's, you know, a no miles GNX. Like, you know, there's really no bearing on real world sales here, you know.
Sure.
Everybody thinks their stuff is super unique and super valuable, but it's like, dude, you got a 100,000 mile Grand National that's in good shape. Like, that doesn't make it worth $100,000.
Right.
Like, there's scarcity, and you know, like we've always talked about, like driving experience. Like, if it's one thing to have something that has no miles and it's a museum piece and you know, it's the last example, but, you know, a regular driver, like, I don't really see prices, you know, skyrocketing for sure. Those cars in particular. What I did notice was a ton of GM trucks, even some Ford trucks, but like anything from the 60s and 70s. And now we're starting to creep into the 80s with the later model square bodies. There weren't really, there wasn't really a lot of OBS trucks there. And, you know, I don't consider them collectible, even though, you know, there are some special trucks in that 88 to 98 body style. But the square bodies and the 67 to 72 C10s are just out of control. Like, I saw dozens of trucks go for over $100,000.
Right.
In fact, one of my coworkers, Kyle Williams, he sold his, it was a 67 or 68, super clean custom C10 on bags, on 22-inch US mags, like super clean build. Like, it is one of the, probably one of the top five custom C10s on the planet, in my estimation. And that truck sold for $275,000.
Good Lord. That's,
I mean, I think it has an LS3, and it's like a full chassis truck, and I mean, it's impeccable, but I mean, that's outrageous. I don't know if there's another, you know, avenue on the planet where you command $275,000 for
no way
an old Chevy truck, you know?
Yeah, dude, people go
for him, but
people go, you know, I don't know where the ceiling is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It, especially at Barrett Scottsdale, people go mental. I don't think we talked about my trip to Mecum on the podcast yet. I don't think we did.
Yeah.
Cause like we got back, we had other shit to do. We had guests on. So like, I don't think it came up, but it was the same story out there where like just stuff was popping off for just insane amounts of money. We ate outside at lunch. They had this little food court and this random dude's like, "Hey, can I just pull up? There's nowhere to sit." We're like, "All right, you know, if we're in Florida, if we're going to get COVID, it's going to be because of you, you motherfucker."
Well, not really. Right.
I was like one of seven people out of like thousands to wear a mask there. And they looked at me like I was the Antichrist, which was really, really fun, really fun. And I got home and I tested and I didn't have COVID, which is mind blowing to me. But back to the cars. This dude was there to bid on. They had a handful of Tommy Ivo drag race cars. And then they had the Dragula coffin from the Munsters. Uh-huh.
I didn't see that cross. I did see the four engine station wagon.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it went for, but that's one of my favorites.
Dragula went off just before the Tommy Ivo stuff. And this guy was telling us how he wanted that. He's opening up a muscle car museum in Ohio or some shit like that. The pre-auction estimate was 75 to 100. And he's like, "I'd go up to like 125 for that." And it went for $440,000.
Dragula.
Yes. The fucking coffin. The coffin.
It's like a movie car. It doesn't do anything.
Crazy. Like, maybe you have a hard on for George Barris because I think he designed it, whatever. So this guy anger bought Tommy Ivo's wheel standing truck. He had some like wheel stander of a truck. He bought that for like 200 something out of like, he was upset about that. He was telling us all this shit and he was telling us about other cars. The guy is like multi millionaire. But it's funny how stuff was going insane. The Bad Boys Porsche went for, I thought it was 1.7, but either way I expected, you know, high six figures. And then I read the pre-auction estimate and I was already low. Like the pre-auction was like 1.3, which is insane, but that's like the car that originally as a kid made me like Porsches, Bad Boys Porsche.
I didn't care about Porsche before then. Like, it was always like the villain's car. It was always like the douchebag and like whatever rom-com or whatever.
Like the guy whose dad wants to take over a ski town in the 80s or some shit. That car. Oh, I literally had to
drive. That's how you drive.
I said that as we were looking at it because you have to, because it has the Bad Boys plate on the back and then it has some. Like Bad Boys 1, Florida. And then it has like some French plate on the front. But it was fucking flawless.
I saw Michael Bay posted after that sold. He was like, "Can you believe that the car that I sold to my buddy for $65,000 just sold for $1.3 million? Because that was his personal car. That's what one thing I love and respect about Michael Bay is that he uses his own personal cars or like, you know, doppelganger, like
right.
the same car that he actually owns in his movies, like the 550 in Bad Boys 2. Like he had one of those.
Oh, really? Oh, nice. I didn't know that. And then, well, speaking of, it was even crazier for that. It was the Hirohata Mercury Custom.
Yes.
That I forget, the family bought it for like a few $100s or something like that.
1959. The guy bought that car. It was like built in like 56 or whatever.
Yeah.
And Hirohata, like the original owner, the guy that commissioned it from Barris, he sold it for, like, you know, a few $100,000 in 1959. And that car has not changed hands since. That's an amazing story.
And it went for
over $2 million.
Yeah. It was wild. I just saw it.
It's always at the Grand National Roadster Show, but I just saw it on Sunday at the Grand National Roadster Show. And it's like, okay,
oh,
now we know what this thing is actually worth, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was funny because Wayne Carini was
always speculation. Like, if this thing comes up for sale, like the guy owned it since 1959. He died a few years ago and his family finally got around to selling it.
They were on stage crying.
Yeah.
Which was nuts. And then that dude, Michael Fuchs. Fuchs. Okay. Well, his car collection fucks. He auctioned off tons of shit. And
that's how he sold a yellow Speedtail.
Yep.
He
sold off a couple yellow Ferraris, the Speedtail. He had a handful of shit. And he was up there on stage because like it would get close to reserve. They'd be like, take it off. He'd be like, yeah, he like was letting reserves fly on all his shit.
It was all snowing.
No, I didn't. I was trying to avoid as many people as possible.
Yeah, I agree.
The car we went up on stage for and we were actually on TV for was the F40. There was a Ferrari F40. And then we were up on, for that. And then the reason I went in the first place.
His collection? I don't know.
What's that?
Was that from his collection?
It may have been. I forget if it was his collection or a separate collection, but there was an F40 there. And
I don't think it was his. I don't think he has anything older like that.
Yeah,
like,
right.
He really started like ramping up his collection like 15 years ago.
It must have been the collection.
I met him and I did a bunch of wheels for him. He's a super nice guy.
Oh, really?
Super nice. Yeah. Like back when he was like really going ham, like the early 2008 to like 2013 was when he would like, you know, debut like two or three cars at Pebble Beach every year
in his
they're all crazy colors, crazy spec. And like he did wheels on all of them. Like he had he had three Rolls Royce drop heads that we did wheels on. And one was yellow with black interior. Well, black and yellow interior. One was red with white interior. And he basically challenged Rolls Royce in their, you know, bespoke, whatever their Mulliner is. I hate to, cross-reference Bentley's Custom Works, whatever it's, but anyway, they're like their custom, like spec division. He really challenged them. Like these cars, his three drop heads all had no carpet. They had leather floors.
Oh shit.
So like his red car had white leather with white leather flooring.
Jesus Christ.
And red carbon fiber decking, where normally the drop heads had teak decking.
Yeah.
He had red carbon fiber. His yellow one had black carbon fiber. His purple one had purple carbon fiber. Like, there's that saying that, money can't buy you taste, but he really challenged those guys and like really took things to another level. Like
I remember he had
like an SLS AMG, one of the first ones.
Yeah.
And it was red with white interior to match his drop head. So like, the exact same colors, the exact same materials, and Mercedes wouldn't install a white dash in the car.
Yeah.
Like, this is unsafe. You're blinded. Like, you can't see. So they shipped the car to the U.S. without a dash and then basically had the dash installed at the dealer upon delivery. Like, there's like, I just love like, inside baseball stuff like that about how he worked with the factories to get exactly what he wanted when a lot of times they didn't want to do it, but they can't turn down the money. He's like, he's no object. Like, I want what I want. You're going to give it to me. Figure out a way.
Well, but that yellow is his own
really
color.
Nice dude.
Yeah. The yellow, I think, is his own color. And it's Fuchs yellow or some shit like that. Yeah. And like at Rolls Royce, he's the only one allowed to use that specific yellow.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's insane, but it's also baller as fuck.
Yeah.
All right, besides the auctions, let's talk about some racing.
You
were paying a lot of attention to Daytona 24 Hour.
Yeah, I camped out and I watched for probably 8 hours. I have a vested interest. Rotiform actually get that product placement in there for you guys watching YouTube. But Rotiform actually makes wheels for a lot of the Daytona 24 competitors, a lot of MC competitors. And in fact, we were on the overall winning team of Meyer Shanks Racing with Helio and his crew. So, you know, Rotiform now has, I don't know if any of us get Rolex Daytonas.
I don't think so.
But yeah, we can boast that we are Rolex, you know, Daytona 24 hour winners.
Yeah. Maybe your bosses are using it as an excuse to go buy some, but
totally. Like, I don't know if there's a, compensation package attached to the win, but it's definitely bragging rights. So it's pretty cool. I was jealous of my coworkers that were there at the track until I saw the temperatures at the track overnight. Got down to like 30, 32 degrees. Like, it was freezing. Nobody expected that from Florida.
From Florida, yeah.
Even in January. But they made the most of it, and it sounds like a good time was had by all. And nice. Yeah, our motorsports program is seemingly thriving. You know, nice. I don't know that it translates to
sales
on street.
I mean, it might. I was more jealous of your coworker who got to go to a non-car thing, who was at a snowboarding event called Natural Selection.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, Mike Callahan was living it up out there.
And my buddy Sam Dobbins. So Sam.
Oh, Sam was there too?
Yeah, Sam did both. Sam was the lucky goose who did Natural Selection, got to shred all week, and then flew straight to Daytona for the 24-hour race and shot that, and then got back, I think, on Tuesday.
Jesus. For those of you listening who don't know what Natural Selection was, it's a new snowboarding event. I think Travis Rice, who's one of the greatest snowboarders of all time, put it on at Jackson Hole.
Jackson Hole.
And I'm friends with one of Ron's coworkers, Mike, and the things he was posting on Instagram, because his viewpoint was just, it was absolutely insane. The quality of snowboarding and you guys were there. I forget why you were there.
We sponsored it with fuel.
That's what it was. Yeah. Okay. So like overlandy, adventure-y, truck, off-roady shit. Okay. Now, the reason you weren't on hand to shoot or record the podcast with Nextbase was because you were off doing some cool video shit.
Yeah.
You can't tell us all the details, but go for it.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's such an incestual deal. That's the only way I know how to describe it. But I used to work at Hoonigan. Now, Wheel Pros has merged with Hoonigan. So we're all working together and kind of covering bases and figuring out a marketing plan and a media plan for the two brands moving forward. And yeah, I got to go host. They asked me to co-host a couple episodes of This Versus That. So we went up to Santa Margarita last Thursday, Friday, and we shot a bunch of episodes. And I can't say what we saw or what competed, but it was a good time. It was super fun. It was super cold. We had 6 a.m. call time, so it was work. It wasn't all, you know, fun and games. We had 6 a.m. call times, and it was like 30 degrees, and it was miserable for a couple hours each day, but in the end, like, it was totally fun. Like, those guys have that down pat, and it's amazing what they can fit into to just a few hours every day. And it was a good time. Met some good people from around, I don't want to say around the world, but all over North America. How about that?
Sure.
There was a Canadian contingent that I was super proud of and happy to meet. Their story is incredible. And they basically threw together a car, and that probably cost them $5,000 to build.
Wow.
They thrashed and drove 51 hours to show up for the event. And I don't want to ruin anything, but they did respectably well, and they definitely earned my respect and admiration. So
sweet.
It was a good time.
I'm looking forward to it. I think the turnaround on those is pretty quick, right?
So, yeah, we should see those episodes starting in February. So
sweet.
February through March.
All right. Now, before we roll into our various project car stuff, we got some Instagram questions. I only asked Instagram this week because Instagram seems to do better than Twitter for questions. I didn't even pose the question because it was a quick. I'll continue to do Twitter questions going forward, but today I just did Instagram.
How was the response? Because I reposted and asked for questions and I got nothing.
Oh no, we got seven, so that's fine. Your boy Abel Mech. Mm-hmm. Do you think Chevy will ever launch a Raptor / TRX competitor?
They did that. What is that, Silverado?
They're trying to do a Silverado VR2.
Right.
Which Chevy's very behind the ball. As Ford rolled out the Bronco, Jeep has the Wrangler, and then Chevy gives us the Blazer, which is a pile of shit. Which is
drive.
Yeah. And then they have the Silverado ZR2 coming, which is supposed to be like maybe a pseudo competitor, but it seems like it'd be more of a Tundra TRD Pro competitor. I don't think Chevy will ever get their shit together and fully launch a true Raptor TRX competitor, because those trucks are absolutely bonkers what they can do.
Totally. I do have a counterpoint to that, though.
Sure.
I feel like they are putting all their eggs into the EV basket as far as off-road, you know, real off-road, not dominating, but real off-road capable high-powered machines with, you know, the Hummer and whatever the Silverado EV that they just introduced. I feel like that is more their response to the TRX and the Raptor. I think
it's also partly probably a response to like the Rivian and stuff.
Totally.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's many people cross shopping a Rivian and that Silverado or a Hummer. Like, they're totally different customers.
Yeah. But that Silverado EV Trail Boss does look pretty cool.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. But it's like, it's like our buddy Anthony and I were discussing this. He was like, I got to have that. I'm just like, yeah, that's totally garish, man. You need a Rivian. Like, you know, Rivian's like handsome, composed, like, you know, it's perfectly sized, but he's like,
I need a big truck. I need a big truck. Yeah.
Like, he needs the Shaq Diesel EV truck. Yes. I'm just like, all right, dude, go for it. But
if they offered the Superman seats, he might even go for it. Pretty cool project says Enkis are not forged. Are forged wheels hyped? Are they worth the money?
Totally. But I mean, you know, if I weren't a wheel industry veteran, I would still say the same. They're worth it for certain vehicles and applications. Like, you know, does your S-Class, does your Tesla, does your Jaguar need forged wheels? No, but, you know, typically you only get the personalization options in a custom built forged wheel, you know, to make that wheel your own. And I mean, there are performance benefits typically, but not always. You know, it's right. You know, a lot of wheels are just, you know, made cosmetically, that they're forged and they only have a cosmetic benefit because, you know, we're not considering weight savings, we're not considering, you know, a lot of things that would improve the performance of the vehicle and, you know, provide advantages. It's just having a bespoke wheel that nobody else has. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you have a Porsche GT car, if you have, you know, even an off-road vehicle that you actually off-road, having a forged lightweight wheel that is stronger than the factory wheel and lighter at the same time, you know, you get improved gas mileage, you get improved performance, you get improved braking performance. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely advantages to having a forged wheel if it's designed and engineered correctly.
There you go. Ultramotive asks, what wheels would Ron pick for my Taycan Cross Turismo? Keep up the great work, gents. This person has a Mamba Green Metallic Taycan Cross Turismo.
Oh, man. We got a number of options coming.
Yeah. Answer this question as I grab a ranch water.
Get it, bro. Get it. So, I mean, selfishly, I'm going to recommend what I've developed. And we've got two new wheels coming from Rotiform. They're both Flowform wheels. So they're relatively lightweight. One is a ZWS wheel. It's a mesh style that's coming very soon. The other is BTL, which is like a split five spoke. If you really wanted to go hardcore and you really want the weight savings and range improvement afforded by a forged wheel, we have a new wheel called the FRA in Rotiform coming as well. Further down the pipeline, we have an EV specific range of wheels, which is called OHM, OHN.
Oh.
And we've got a number of styles in development specifically for e-tron, Taycan, obviously for Tesla, but you know, we're trying to hit the entire EV market. So we'll have wheels and applications for everything from, you know, Mach-E to Taycan e-tron.
Nice. Yeah. That's fun. I Play With Cars asks, if you and Ron had to each customize a Maverick, what mods would you two do?
You go first.
All right. So I would try to mimic. So we're saying mods. So I'm assuming we can't do like engine swaps. But basically what I would do is I would try to turn it into like a little street rally fighter, almost like what the Focus RS was. So I would do, you know, mud flaps. I would have it. So I wouldn't raise it, but I would have it sitting with a good stance while still having knobby tires, but I wouldn't want a lot of gap between the tire and the body. So it looks pretty cool at the same time. And then I would probably, if I did that I would do I would like a light bar for the rally look, but I would want it more hidden. I don't want a big garish light bar on it. And then maybe some kind of hidden rear chase light bar as well. Honestly, if I did that with a Maverick, I right there, and then some Ford Performance tune to get more juice out of it. And then I'm good. If I could do KWs as well.
Got to slide that in.
Yeah, you got to slide it in.
That would actually be really cool. Like I would love to see that. Like that's so far removed from what I have in mind, but that would actually be a really cool like daily that you could overland, or at least, you know, like you would use going mountain biking, like at least, you know, hitting
the trail. I would do like fire roads.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I would do the exact opposite. I'm low and slow. Like I'm not going to try and pretend like it's a performance vehicle. So, you know, forget performance mods. Low and slow, slammed on air, probably 20-inch wheels, you know, old school. Like, this has already been done, so it's not original. So, yeah,
It's your style.
I'm a little bit hesitant to, like, you know, I'm basically biting somebody else's style. But I think that's the cool thing about the Maverick is that it lends itself to throwback, like, neon graphics, you know, tribal graphics, crazy paint schemes, and I would even do like a tweed interior, like totally keep it like 80s, 90s sport truck, like mini truck.
Mini truck. Yep.
Just slam it. Just dragging frame, throwing sparks on the freeway. All that. Nice.
Love it. Commander 2v6. Canada's cheapest car, the Chevy Spark, is done. Even if they won't, who should make a cheap, small car? I'm going to go back to Ford, and I wish they would make an electric Fiesta. You know, I know they abandoned cars but I feel like an electrified Fiesta, as light as possible, you know, cloth, all the stuff, some real basic interior with like just sync though. So you could still, you don't have to offer nav and all this shit, cause you could bake it into the sync through your phone. So you could keep the cost of it low. And then just throw some batteries in the bottom of it to keep the center of gravity low. And then you can have some really good fun in an affordable entry-level EV with the Fiesta body style just made modern.
I would support that 100%. But my answer is bring back the car of the people, Volkswagen Beetle. Just a totally simplified, like, you know, the last Beetle was definitely catered to, I don't know, consumer tastes that needed not necessarily luxury, but kind of pampering and, you know, really were more about being seen.
Yeah.
Than being seen in and driving. It was more of a fashion statement than anything. If you had a really decontented new Beetle that was just front drive, that was, you know, totally like catered to hypermilers and I don't know, maybe some sort of hybrid powertrain, even like, you know,
or like a 3-cylinder engine or something.
Yeah. A hydrogen fuel cell, whatever, like, you know, just something unique, but, you know, basically proletarian transportation,
yeah.
You know,
like a dirt cheap Beetle. Yeah. I can get down with like, that. I like that. It looks like Condemner, not 2v6. In December, Toyota says Toyota says $70 billion into electrification. How would you use that money if you ran Toyota? Toyota does need to get deeper into the EV pool. They've been taking their times, which is funny. You would think they would have been one of the first to dive in, but they have a heavy focus. They have a focus on hydrogen, making that still work too. I think they want to wait till batteries were at a much more acceptable level. And Akio Toyota has also pledged to make their cars more exciting to drive. And I think right. you just got to find a way to balance the two. And so I think I actually think they're doing that, to be totally honest. They have a car like the GR Yaris, which we don't get, which we should get. We're supposed to get a GR Corolla, which right. could be potentially very cool. And then you still have some of the off-roady adventure-y stuff in the trucks. And they're just now starting to do the electrification. I just wish they weren't doing that weird whatever the hell it is, the BZ4X, whatever the hell it is it's called that they're doing in partnership with Subaru. I wish they could just do it more. They don't have to necessarily be specifically mainstream. Like, they don't have to take a Corolla and then electrify it, even though that would make a ton of sense. But whatever is on, they need to make a modular global electric platform and then apply it while still doing the fun stuff that they're currently doing, because they're making some fun stuff.
Yeah. I would agree. Like you said, global modular electric platform. I would love to see a dual motor Sienna. Fast right. EV Sienna. Like
randomly, just because it's electric, it has like 450 horsepower, you know?
Come on, 800.
Okay.
like a real serious VIP, like badass minivan. Like
right.
that, I feel like that'll be the last frontier of fast EVs. But it's got to happen because, you know, there's moms and dads that want to haul ass and,
right.
you know, save the environment at the same time.
Sure.
That with no kids, no family, that's still something that I would love to have just for the novelty.
Yeah, I can't hate on that. I like that a lot. It's like how I still dream of owning a Mercedes R63.
Yes, totally.
Same concept, just evolved to today.
Yeah.
This one's funny because it's from Raymond Dees. No question, just asking you to reconsider your views on off-road tires besides the BFG KO2. So this is very funny to me because I've gotten some shit. So on Auto Trader, there's a TikTok where I have to do some TikToks, which Josh edits them and posts them, and then I don't even look at them because I'm not on TikTok. And I was called a boomer in a video for saying KO2s are the best tire, which is fucking hilarious. The BF Goodrich KO2 is the best off-road tire you can buy if you're looking for strength and durability and just devil may care off-road adventure. There's a reason it wins everything. And I know the KR3 is the race tire. I know the KM3 is the mud tire, but the KO2 is derived from those as well. There's a reason every team that wins Baja has fucking BF Goodrich tires on their trucks and King of Hammers and all this shit. They're the best. They're so tough. Now, the flip side to this is I never knock the other off-road tires.
Sure.
I think the Falcon Wild Peak is a great tire. I think the Toyo Open Country is a great tire. The new Vredestein Pinza is supposed to be a really good tire. Those are good tires. I've just locked into KO2 right from the beginning, and I have no reason to go to something else to try when I know those other tires are fine. The KO2 is the best. It's like if you got a car and it has Michelin Pilot Sport PS4s, you're not going to be like, oh, you know what? I'm going to give the fucking Nexans a try, or I'm going to give the this a try. You know, you already have the PS4Ss on your car. You're there. You've done it. You don't need the Pirellis. I do not like Pirelli tires, to be totally honest. I've never driven a car and be like, oh, wow, these Pirellis are great. I have my issues with Pirelli. But the other things, specifically the off-road tire, Falcon Wild Peak, great tire. Toyo Open Country, great tire. KO2, best tire. It is heavier. There's potential for road noise, but I'm going off-road in an already loud vehicle. I can ram into rocks, and the sidewall isn't going anywhere. It's the best. But when I say that, it doesn't mean I hate the competition. The competition is great, and good competition makes for better stuff and a better marketplace of tires. I'm not revising my position on the KO2. It's the best. I've even been offered the chance to test a handful of other tires on my truck. And I just said, nah, I'm good. Like, cause I know those other tires are fine. Even on a very entry level all terrain, the Yokohama Geolander, which is what's the word I'm looking for? It's like, you're giving up some all terrain ability for a more calm on-road driving experience, which is why it's a great tire for Subaru Foresters or the Subaru Wilderness line of vehicles, because it's still decent off-road and it's really good on-road for an all-terrain. It's a good tire for what it is. Again, KO2s will take you farther. So there's that. So sorry, Raymond. I don't dislike the other tires and I like that other people run those other tires. It's KO2 for me, and I cannot wait till it evolves to whatever the KO3 is going to be, because you know that shit can't be far along. So there you go.
I went on a tire rant. I admire your steadfastness.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not as opinionated on tires. I don't have an opinion on off-road or, you know, all-terrain or mud-terrain tires at all. That's not my bag. But it's funny that you mentioned Michelin, because I swear by Michelin for my cars, my street cars, and like,
right.
I don't have a sponsorship, even though my car was just in a Michelin / BFD commercial. Actually, they did hook up a set of tires, so technically I am sponsored by Michelin. But let me walk that back. But I have yet to receive them. But no, I've always bought Michelins as long as I could afford them. For like the last 10 years, if I could, it was always Michelin. You know, from PS2 to Super Sport to PS4 now, or Sport Cup 2s, you know, I try and equip all my cars with Michelin, which is, you know, the parent company of BFG.
Right, right.
But I'm not getting paid to say this necessarily, but that's just right. Like, it's just what I prefer. Like, again, Michelin is what I prefer, but I'm with you. Pirelli's just not my bag, even though they've traditionally made a lot of sizes that allowed me to sell more wheels, which I do appreciate. They've made sizes that that have supported the aftermarket, and that is hugely appreciated because, you know, for example, we sold a ton of 24x15-inch wheels over the years for a lot of old schools, even wide body, like new muscle cars, and Pirelli was the only brand that actually supported that and made the 405/25/24 tire that was appropriate for that. But, you know, Falcon makes great tires. Nitto makes great street tires.
Absolutely.
They all do. Like, you know, everybody stepped their game up. So it's, you know, you don't have to bash another brand to have a preference.
Right.
I agree with that.
That's a good way to say it. And for the record, the KO2s on my Montero were given to me. I did not pay for those. BFG doesn't pay me. I haven't even spoken to anybody at the company in a while because I haven't needed tires in a while.
Had some shakeups, and at least on the marketing side in the last couple of years. So, you know, who knows where we even stand with our own deals, but
sure. And if I reached out to the person, they're gone. And then the new person's like, no, we don't need to give you new KO2s. I would go buy another set.
Like I would still go and buy.
Wouldn't hesitate. I would actually try. What I really want to do, cause I'm a fucking idiot, is I want to get, and this would be terrible. It's a terrible idea, but I want to get the KR2, or I think they're KR3 now. No, whatever the race version of the KO2 is. Cause whenever it has the R, it's the race version. Okay. And then you get the blue and red lettering on the side. And it's like,
I just love, again, I have no idea how this impacts performance, but I love their like ribbed sidewalls on the race tires. Like all the trophy trucks with BFGs have that like ribbed sidewall. Like I don't even pay attention to the lettering, but like there's something that's like so purpose built and like just so no nonsense about their rib sidewall, where everybody else has like all this like knurling and all these like crazy patterns. They just got this smooth rib sidewall. So
yeah. And you know what? You know what this reminds me of too is like I recently got into Jordans. Because I reached an age in I never could afford Jordans as a child. My parents couldn't afford Jordans. So I never even thought about getting Jordans as a kid. And then, I think when I was, I'm 41, when I was 39, maybe, or 40, I realized I was looking at a pair of Jordans, like I could just buy that. If I want that, I can buy that sneaker now. And I did. And there are a lot of sneakers, you know, that are better or whatever, but like the hottest looking sneaker on your feet is a J1. A Jordan 1 is like the prototype, especially when you wear it. Like if I'm a regular ass looking IPA drinking white dude.
Great hair though.
Thank you. But if I'm like, I usually wear them more when I'm traveling. I don't just wear them around town. I wear them like when I'm traveling and going to events. Cause to me, it's still an occasion sneaker for me. You know, I don't wear them to fucking Radwood where they break. Yeah. Well, I know. Yeah. When I need to stop. So like I'll be at the airport in like my regular clothes or just like this outfit, like black button down, dark jeans and a pair of Jordans on your feet. And like, there's something about wearing them that feels good. When I have the KO2s on my truck, that shit feels right.
Yeah, dude. Those that know, know and appreciate.
Yeah, yeah.
You get that nod. Like, I see you.
Now, speaking of the Montero, well, first, Ron's fleet. I was going to ask him what's going on. And he said, went by the body shop last week. No progress.
Shit. So disappointed. Like, I don't even know if I've talked about this Porsche project, but the 84 Targa that I'm...
You've talked about it, yeah.
I'm heading up this resto mod on, like... Oh man, like they've made some progress, but progress is slow. Like the body shop has been ravaged by COVID, by staff shakeups. So yeah, I stopped by unexpectedly last week and or unannounced last week and wasn't totally thrilled with the progress on that or my Audi. They've vacuumed my car and removed the glass, but apparently they're waiting on a bunch of parts from Germany because there's certain things that I'm just like not willing to compromise on.
Sure.
Like, oh, we could go, you know, find this part, you know, this carbon piece or this, you know, leather dash covering or whatever from a salvage yard. And like, no, like this car like has low miles. It was basically brand new. Like, I'm just not willing to do that. And they're like, oh, well, you know, there's scratches in the leather and we could just dye these or touch them up. Like, that's what the insurance company wanted to do. The body shop held steadfast and like, no, we're ordering replacement parts from Audi. Like that's, you know, that's what our customer wants. That's what, you know, the service that we provide, like we don't half-ass it. And I'm just like, thank you. I appreciate that. But with no end in sight and no ETA on these parts, now I'm getting like,
yeah.
When am I going to get my car back?
You know, did they put like, your
cam in? I want it back. Right. I want it back. Right. I don't want it back in a hurry. You know, right. If it's not 100%, then I'm not going to be satisfied. So I do want them to take their time and do it right. But yeah, it's super frustrating not having that car. Like,
sure. It's the old fast, cheap, good pick two.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I had to drop that quote on my friend/client with the Porsche today. It was just like, listen, man, we're at a point where we can't rush them. We're at their mercy. Like, we just got to let them take their time, do this right. Because if we rush them, there's going to be, you know, compromises and we're going to have to bring this thing back. Like, just make sure it's 100% and no comebacks. So
yeah. Yep.
It's a test of patience for sure. But you know, you've got to keep in mind COVID and everything else going on.
Like, sure.
You know, I trust that they'll do it right. And that's all that I care about in the end.
Okay. On my side of the things, Montero is officially back in action. While it was out of action, I had the dash cam installed. So the next base 622 is in there. Now I can finally really put it to the test. And while I was there, I also had them upgrade the audio system because I'm a fucking idiot. And the bill.
You're a connoisseur. You're an audiophile. Dude,
the bill went from like... I'm not going to tell you the actual number, but the just to have the dash cam installed was extremely reasonable. Like we're talking like just to do like $150
sure
to install the like hardwire in the dash cam. And then I was like, well, you know, the Montero only has 4 speakers and the 2 in the back aren't wired correctly. So they're not even on. Because like I installed 4 speakers and the ones in the dash were hard to find because the size is weird. But I put like focal speakers in there, which is like a good one. The ones in the back, the wiring was so fucked up. I couldn't figure out and I hate wiring. So I was like, fuck it. So all I've ever had were the fronts running and they're small speakers. And so I had all highs, no lows. It was almost like I was running Bose. So I was like, as soon as there's any wind noise, you can't hear shit in the truck. And I told them that I'm like, they're like, all right. I said, I know in the doors originally on these Monteros, there's a space for a speaker and I wasn't going to cut the door cards, But then I thought, this truck has 325,000 miles on it. What are you saving it for? I'm never selling it unless someone was like, I'll give you just a dumb amount of money. I was like, you know what? Cut a hole. Put the speakers in. So they're like, all right. Well, yeah, fuck yeah. So they put speakers in there. They fixed the rears. So they wired. They're like, I don't know what your previous owner did, but that wiring was fucked. I'm like, all right. Yeah, I thought so. And then they put an amp that lives under the passenger seat. So it's like properly powered now too. And it sounds great. I can hear it on the highway with the windows down. I can hear my music, which is like, feels so good. Yeah. So I had, but it jumped the price by like, it added a digit to the bill, which I was like, oh, okay. I'm a smart consumer. That's fucking stupid.
When I did the stereo in the Tahoe, it was the same way. I was just like, I have a number that I can't go over. Like, I just, you know, I can't do more than this.
Right.
And they're like, okay, we can do this. We can do this. And, yeah, you're twice your number. And I was
like, you're like, okay, do it.
Is there any way like we can like shave anything off this? They're like, this is your number. I was just like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, I need this. I want this. Just do it.
That's what I was hoping they would come back. They're like, when they're like, all right, here's the estimate. I was like, hoping it'd be X. And it was like X times two. I was like,
yeah, totally.
But I was like, motherfucker. And I looked up the components. They weren't, the actual labor prices were not crazy. Right. I was like,
right. I definitely didn't feel like I got ripped off. Listen, yeah. I installed car stereos for 2 summers and I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to pay somebody to do that. But now in my old age, I'm like, it's right. Totally not worth it for me to fuck this up.
Right.
And like take this on and spend 2 weekends and like have my entire car ripped apart for 2 months. And who knows when I'll get back to it. Just take my money. Call me when it's ready.
Right.
And if I have any issues, I know I can take it back to you. And I haven't had any issues, knock on wood. So
I talked to the shop for when the roof rack comes in, because there's an integrated light bar in that. And I'm like, hey, when this comes in, I need to run wiring from the light bar. And this is an older vehicle and I don't have the molding of modern vehicles. I need to run the wiring through the roof. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, we can do that. We've done that. I'm like, all right, cool. Which is scary, but I'm glad somebody else is going to do it. And when they do that, I'm going to have a radio installed for the antenna. But the big thing is I got the gauge cluster back, and that's back in, and that's what was preventing me. That's why the Montero was down. But the gauge cluster is back in. The mileage is now closer to what should be considered accurate. Okay. It now reads 323,000, like 879. So that's legit. I had it rolled up, and you know, it's fucking, that's where it's supposed to be. I feel like my math is technically fine for what I've done, because on the vehicle history reports, there's a part where it's like, you know, you can see the mileage for when it's been registered or re-registered. And there was a point where it said 276. And then the next one after that was like 170 something.
Right.
And I put from when I bought it, say I bought it at like 180, no, less than or more than that. But whatever, when I decided to spin the odometer, I had probably 192,000. So I took the difference from 176 to 192 and added it to the 276. Yeah. And I feel like that's fine.
Yeah.
Also, again, getting back to the, I'm not going to sell it. Right. Who gives a shit? Exactly. But I do feel like it's more honest with the actual mileage of the vehicle. And it's cool that it's, you know, let's go for fucking 400, you know, let's see what happens. Yeah. But it's in, I'm going to be testing the dash cam. I got to get this truck. I just washed it literally tonight because it was just sitting there. It was just dirty and sad. I washed it and I'm probably going to get it dirty tomorrow, you know, because I want to drive it off road. I haven't driven the fucking truck.
Fresh burn dirt.
Yeah. On the Jag, I updated the headlights, or I swapped in the yellow headlights, and I finally drove the car at night and they're extremely.
Now you have yellow headlights and fog lights?
Yeah. I what? Put in yellow really? Headlights. Yes. Like French style. Yeah, I got to show you the picture. It's fucking.
They look cool. I saw your post, but I didn't realize they were yellow headlights.
Oh, the headlights are yellow, but I think I'm going to turn the fog lights, even though they're not fog lights, they're actually the high beams.
Right.
I'm going to put those back to, a white, I think, and just do the yellow on the headlights. But I drove it at night because on last Thursday, my travel got so screwed up, delayed. I was supposed to be home by like noon.
And that
I got
was the real reason why we didn't record.
Yeah, right. I got into John Wayne Airport at 10:30, which is like the latest you can get into John Wayne before they close the airport. But I had to drive the Jag home. And I was like, these headlights are very yellow. I'm definitely getting pulled over because that shit is not legal.
Is it not? I don't
know. No, you are not allowed to. You're basically technically, I think throughout the entire United States, as far as I'm aware, you are only allowed to have like white colored headlights. This is a white headlights America.
White lights only.
This is white lights only.
Oh man. I didn't know that. I didn't realize that. But
because like anytime you see someone with like blue lights on the front of their car, that's super illegal.
I know. I know blue and red are
right. But like for headlights, I'm like 90% sure you're literally only allowed white.
Well, do they provide increased visibility or
why did you choose
yellow?
I think if it was foggy, they might. Like there'd be good contrast. I did it purely for aesthetic during the day. Black and gold, baby.
I don't know, man.
Black and gold.
I get it. But you already had the high beams. Like
I know. But I couldn't not jump on these cat themed fucking former French headlights.
Headlights is just like
it's very French. It's very French on a British car with an American engine.
Reminds me of urine. It's like pissy lights.
Oh, they're not pissy lights. They're not pissy lights. They're kitty lights. They're pussy lights.
And with that,
pretty much, yeah. All right, Ron, tell everybody where they can find you online.
777 style on Instagram and the web.
The web, the worldwide.
I pronounce it 777 style. That's how I say it. But
right.
Then people start typing out 777 style. Oh. It work, and it's like.
I never thought of that. That's funny shit.
Yeah.
That's good. I'm at Hooniverse Jeff. Like and subscribe to our podcast specific YouTube channel if you haven't already done so. We don't have a lot of subscribers on there, which doesn't bother me because people view this and listen to it in a lot of other ways. Yeah. But it would be nice to get it to a point where we could support the YouTube portion of this podcast with advertising, just the general YouTube advertising, which you can always skip, but I think we need to get to like 1,000 subscribers on that channel to do it. So that's going to take a bit of time.
Challenge accepted.
Right.
I'll pour some effort into it.
There you go.
I just posted my first Instagram reel yesterday.
Dude, they've been
sweating. Like they want content creators to pour into reels and like
everybody's doing reels
and all this shit and like
they get so much more reach
totally
than all the other shit. I did one on yesterday on the four. I'm gonna try to start doing like one a day. I did one on the I have a Raptor this week and I got it absolutely filthy with trail pinstripes, but it was just dust. And I posted this picture and people were like, they're like, you fucked that truck up. And so I did a reel of like literally wiping the dust off. And I was like, it's fine, guys. It's not the Maybach that I fucked up that I already told you about. And that car's fine too. Hooniverse Jeff, like and subscribe to the podcast, all that fun shit. Go buy, there's a fresh t-shirt on Blipship, which is one that we sold prior that someone reached out and asked if
I've never seen it before, so I'm copying. I think that's
sweet.
Dark
sweet.
Side of the Hoon, right?
Yeah. One of my buddies was wearing it at Meekum in Florida. I was like, hey, nice. And I'm like, that shirt's just about to come back out. And then I had people like, hey, can you get me one of those? And the funny thing is when people ask me that, like my brother asked for one and then a really good friend of mine asked for one. I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. But it's not like I stock them. It's through Blipship. So I have to go, I buy it. Right. So I buy it and I used to have a code for like 10% off, which I forgot or it doesn't work anymore. So like I buy it, but I'm happy to do it.
I always support my friends and their apparel, accessories, whatever it is.
Thank you.
But I mean, it's not our deal, but I'm more ingrained in Hooniverse than most people, but I would never ask.
Sure. But then when you get your own Blipship store, when 777 style gets on Blipship store, I will be rocking those.
Inevitable.
Right.
Inevitably. I got some ideas.
Sweet. We'll pitch them soon. Thank you for listening, everybody. And next week, stay tuned for my episode 319 with Jeff Chu from Nextbase. It's a quick episode, but I think we covered a lot in it, and I think it was pretty fun, and it's going to lead to more episodes down the road. And with that, we will see y'all down the dusty podcast trail.
Sayonara.